Welcome to the podcast of the European Society of Anesthesiology and Intensive Care. I'm your host, Dr. Paul McConnell from the Royal Alexandra Hospital in Paisley. Today, we are speaking about standing up to gender discrimination in anesthesia. And we are thrilled and honoured to have Dr. Nathalie Uhlweiler from Switzerland to speak to us. Nathalie, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, Nathalie, your case is very well known within Switzerland. It might not be quite as well known to the rest of the world. Can you tell us briefly about your background to set the scene about where you were in your career before you became a mother?
I am a anesthesiologist and a emergency physician. And I wanted to pursue a academic career. I went abroad to Stanford, did my research fellowship, and became an associate professor when I was reaching my 40s. And in the same time, I became a mother. Until I became a mother, my career was going quite fine. I would say it was a bit harder than a man's career, but I was able to continue and to get somewhere. And then with motherhood, all found an end. And I have even been fired from the position I had, which made for me, everything I was working for was all of a sudden was gone with motherhood.
So it sounds like, you know, before motherhood, you had quite a high flying career. You'd done an awful lot of work and research. And then things changed. Could you go into that in a wee bit more detail and tell us about what happened?
So we had several problems because when I was starting medicine, I'm born in the 70s, we were not many women, but then it was picking up. And so we had women doctors who were pregnant. And the hospital had an awful time to deal with pregnancy because you have a certain limitation of the time you can work a day according to Swiss law. This would be 9 hours a day or 45 hours a week. And we all know that very often we work a lot more than this. And I tried to motivate my superiors to find solutions to include these women in the workforce, but still respect that their body needs a bit more time to rest. And I wasn't alone. So we also tried to motivate our superiors to have more women in leadership position, but they didn't like that. And then when I myself was pregnant, things got more difficult. So they stopped my project. They were taking my research money away. And I couldn't really do anything about it being pregnant because when you're pregnant, you're not in your normal state. You're less strong. You have less force. You need to rest more. You need to sit down more. It's a different situation. And so after pregnancy, I tried to discuss again, but the doors were closed. And I was waiting for several months to have an answer how I could pursue my career. I still had a rather big research grant from which I could have paid some percentages to work in research, but doors were really closed. They didn't want to have anything to do with me anymore. And so they fired me. And I guess I would have accepted it until this point. But then I tried to find another work in other hospitals, smaller hospitals, without research, without an academic career. And nobody answered my letters. And then I could go to an interview and this person, I knew him from earlier times, and he told me that the hospital where I was fired, they called him and said, do not take this woman. She's a very difficult person. And that was the point where I was really angry because I'm not difficult. I just want equal rights, equal pay, equal chances. And that's the point where I decided to go for a lawsuit, which I won.
So you've alluded to this, to your lawsuit that you have won. Can you tell me a wee bit about your legal journey?
First of all, it's a very long journey. It's now ongoing for 10 years. And I was fired in 2014. In 2018, the verdict that the termination of my position was illegal according to the Swiss law of equality, this became legally active in 2018. And now there's still an ongoing question, which is about, was there a discrimination in promotion? And now in January 2024, the court decided that there was a discrimination based on gender in promotion. So this is a very strong verdict, and I think it's one of the first ones in Switzerland where a court really stated that there has been a gender discrimination in promotion.
So you established then in the courts that you were discriminated against when you were fired, and you were discriminated against as well through promotion. Is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly correct. There were two questions. One is the termination of my position, and the other one is the discrimination in promotion.
And is that drawn a line under everything, or where are you now?
So the hospital which fired me went into recurse, so they apply to the next higher court now. And the higher court will decide again if it was discriminatory or not.
And what sort of support have you had for pursuing, these legal cases?
Not much, to be honest, because there are several organizations for doctors, but in 2014, it was unthinkable that any of these organizations would stand behind a single person or even go and ask this question basically on all women. And I had a lot of support by single persons, but they all told me, I cannot go with my name for you because they would fire me too. And that's the case. That's true. That's what we have been seeing in my case. So I was pretty alone, and definitely financially, I'm alone against a organization which has a lot of money. So it's not an easy situation to deal with.
I mean, it sounds like the input on you, the impact on you directly is huge. I mean, this must have affected you professionally, financially, mentally.
Yeah, it did, definitely. So professionally, I had a hard time to find a job again. And unfortunately, I'm not able to work in research anymore or to teach students, which is sad for me because I just love both of these fields. Then financially, it's really hard because everything in front of court gets really expensive over the years. And there were certain times where I was close to financial failure. Is that the correct word? Yeah. They had to pay me when the verdict became legally active in 2018. They had to pay me the difference between the salary I could make with my new job and the salary I would have made if I could have stayed at the place where I was working. And through this, I could cover the costs for that lawsuit. And mentally, I never went into a burnout or a depression. I think that's just luck. But the pressure is really, really hard, because if you are in front of court, your opposite really tries to destruct you, find every negative side of you. It's not easy.
I mean, your resolve and strength in this situation is incredible. You've alluded to some of the barriers already that you had to pursuing this case. Do you think you're an isolated case?
Not at all. I think discrimination is a systemic problem in medicine. If we have a look in Switzerland, I'm in business now for about 25 years. And I think about 3-4 years after me, it was really half-half. The students which came out of university. So we have 20 years where we have 50% of women in medicine in Switzerland, and we are still around 85% of male head of departments. So something's really going wrong there, and we're missing 35% of women who are not getting anywhere. And this is just a question. If you can calculate, you can see that women are not able to reach leadership positions. I always worked in healthcare, so I can speak for healthcare. But if I look around in other disciplines, I see the same picture. No women in good positions.
You've talked about in other interviews this idea of the leaky pipeline in medicine. What do you mean by that?
So this is school, university, and everything is imagined like a tube where everybody is in, and there are certain holes where women are dropping out. So we have a leak of women, and at the end of the pipeline, at the head of department position, there's no woman left.
Now, there may be some people out there who say, you just can't be a mother and a leader. You have to pay attention to one or the other. How would you respond to them?
So if parenting is a reason to not participate in the workforce, we will have a problem. Or do you mean men can do it and women can't? So if you're saying that, that's very discriminatory. That's the first point. And the second point is, today, we have a lot of very well-educated women. So if we really want to exclude all of them of the workforce, we have an economic problem and a financial problem. I think we have to get there that we have an infrastructure where every parent is recognizing its social responsibility, and where the structures of the society can help those people to go to work and to do their job.
You've mentioned this sort of economic impact and things. Now, other people would say, well, diversity and equality is all very well, but it costs money. Is that a fallacy?
I think so, because we have a lot of well-educated women. If you tell them they cannot work, why do we educate them? Because this education is expensive. In Switzerland, they say to educate a doctor costs the state between $500,000 and $1 million Swiss francs. So it's not clear where it exactly is. But if we educate those women, and in my case, I became an anesthesiologist and an emergency physician. That's even more money, more time. If you don't let me work, it's just a waste of money. So no, diversity is not expensive. We need to get as much people as we can to work, to get a job where they have a pay and social security and everything. So no, I don't think this is expensive.
Now, you alluded to the fact as well that about this leaky pipeline where there's not women in management and upper leadership roles. Do you think women shy away from competition?
No, I don't think so. I think the way to go there is way more harder for women. As I told you, before I was a mother, I think things were a bit more difficult for me. I had to prove once again that I'm capable of doing it. And some days ago, I read an interesting quote. It said, women are hired for their achievements. Men are hired for their potential. And I think that describes it more or less what the problem is. We as women, we always have to prove that we're capable of doing it or that we already did it. And there is much less doubt in male workers.
Yes. I mean, there was a famous quote as well. I don't know who it's attributed to, but they said, just remember, Ginger Rogers did everything Fred Astaire did, but backwards and in high heels.
That's a nice quote.
So, we've established that, you know, there are issues, there are problems. You are not an isolated case, okay? How do we start to change things?
I think we need to have a change top down, and people in leadership positions, they need to work on their stereotypes. There were certain exercises where they covered the names. So the ones who were hiring did not know if they were seeing the CV of a woman or of a man. And as an example, for an orchestra, they were having musicians playing behind the curtain. So no one saw if it was a man or a woman. And then they could, they had a higher percentage of women getting hired because it was not seen that they are women. We need to work on these stereotypes and these structures to really have equal chances and possibilities.
And thinking about medical structures, because that's, you know, your background from it, is there anything else we could do to change the way that either training is structured or how people get into and stay in academia?
If we have clear, transparent, and understandable rules and regulations to get a grant, to get a position, to get a promotion, I think a lot of things would be already in a good place, because nowadays it's the friend of a friend who I know somewhere there. You know, it's a lot about relationship. It's not so much about performance. That's one side which need to be better organized. And the other side is we also need the infrastructure so everyone can go to work. We need daycare, and especially for hospitals which ask us to work on weekends, night shifts, late shifts, or to be on call, to come in, to do something for an hour. We need daycare at the hospitals. For sure, for preschool children, because if you're at home and you're on call and you need to go to the hospital for an hour, what do you do with that child if there is not another person covering up for you? If you're married and one part is not working, that's usually the woman, it's feasible, but you can't forget that this person is not working at all if she covers your back all the time. And that's a very, very expensive solution. So I think we need better infrastructures to be a parent and to work, because parenting is between 25 and 45, or maybe a bit later for doctors. It's a 20-year time part, and these persons need to be at work anyway, if they're a parent or not. So we need better infrastructures there.
Now, you've done a lot of work with the Structurel Association. Can you tell me a wee bit about it?
I founded Structurel with some friends of mine. And the reason is there are a lot of foundations which give you money for this or that or anything, but there is no money in equality. Everybody is totally positive and emotionally with you, but there's no money. And if you want to get a project done, you need money. So we founded this association, and we will try to raise money, and we will try to support women in my situation who have to go in front of a court and everything. So that's the idea of StrictRel.
I think, you know, it's amazing all that you've accomplished so far. If you had a message to young women who are starting their career in anesthesia, in academia, what would it be?
So to my young residents, I always say, you have to pursue your dreams. Go for it. Don't give up. There's a solution for anything.
Natalie, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you here this morning. I think, you know, we think that issues like sexism, like discrimination, don't exist within medicine. But unfortunately, they are still there, bubbling under the surface. I think we have come a long way, but what's happened to you shows that there is still so much to be done. Medicine is made up of the best and brightest of us all, and to prevent people from achieving their best in it, it's just madness. Natalie, it's been wonderful and so informative to speak to you this morning. I'd like to thank everyone for listening to this episode. The ESAIC releases monthly podcasts on the ESAIC website and various streaming platforms, and we hope you'll join us for the next one.